If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
For those of you who watched, I think it's Schoolhouse Rock, that is one of their tunes that they did. Obviously, it's I'm Just a Bill. 7:36 with John Landecker and welcoming Paul Lisnick, political analyst for WGN-TV, to the show. And Paul, it's more than just a bill. Some people say it's big. Some people say it's beautiful. What do you think?
Some say it's ugly. Some say lots of other descriptions. And when you played that song, it made me think of the song It's Just My Bill, which I sang in the Lawyer's Bar Show. That's an old Rodgers and Hammerstein song. Not referring to a budget bill, referring to something else, but nevertheless.
Gotcha. Nevertheless. So, this is not my area. Just, I'm going to say that right off the top. That's why I wanted you to come on, because I hear so much pro and con, and I'm not sure I'm able to sift through who's just pulling my leg and who's really saying what's going on. So that's why we've got you. You know what I mean?
Well, let me try. You want me to clarify a few things? Or
sure.
Guide go me right. through this, whatever, no. whatever you like. So here's the thing. So initially, you're getting the Democrats, so you're getting Republicans saying this is a great bill, or as you say, the one big beautiful bill, which Trump named it. It actually officially got called that. That was the name of the bill. So when people say it, others say, oh, don't say that. But that was actually the name. Then Chuck Schumer got the language stricken from the bill, and then it was just called the bill. But anyway, the Republicans' viewpoint, it's true. The Republicans' viewpoint on this is, look, there's no tax on tips. For people in those positions and people on Social Security, they're going to get another $6,000 deduction. So there's all these sort of positive things the Republicans have talked about. The Democrats have not talked about those, though they will soon. I'll tell you why. But they talk about things like Medicaid is getting cut and the SNAP program, food assistance is getting cut. Republicans say no, no, no. So really, everybody's kind of telling the truth, and everybody's kind of pulling your leg. Here's the trick. With regard to the good, when I say the good stuff, the no tax on tips and that sort of stuff, what the Republicans don't tell you is there's a 3-year limit on that stuff. So, yes, that you'll get that stuff, but those passages die in 3 years. All that stuff about it's tax breaks for the billionaires and tax breaks for the millionaires, that's also true. But that was made permanent. Those will not expire in 3 years. So essentially what it allows Republicans to do is to say something for everybody, except the follow-up question would be, and how long do I get that thing you're talking about? 3 years if you're one of the average folks out there on the street, but forever if you're one of the millionaires and billionaires. With regard to the Medicaid and food SNAP cuts, Republicans are saying, we're not cutting anything. All we're doing is making sure that you're qualified to get it. So there'll be some paperwork for you to sign. Well, the Democrats step right in there and go, wait a minute. Right when you're doing that, you're losing me, because we'll lose a lot of people off the rolls just because they get caught in the quagmire. But one of my favorite, and this we'll put in the category of not true, one of my favorites is, it got to be a Republican talking point, that what they're after with regard to Medicaid are all of these, their words, not mine, 35-year-old guys who are sitting on their parents' couch in the basement collecting Medicaid checks, right? You've heard, John, you can't watch TV and not have heard that.
No, and I think they're also saying that they're playing video games. I think that's also
I meant to say that, yes, playing video games on their parents' couch. Here's the small flaw with that. Medicaid doesn't send people checks. You don't get checks for Medicaid. You go to the hospital, and those bills in the hospital get processed through Medicaid. Oh, there is no check coming to people on the couch playing video games. So, yeah, you got to kind of look beneath some of the surface of some of these talking points that are out there. That's a very long answer. I apologize for that.
No. Please expound. But one thing I think I have noticed, and you mentioned Social Security. And there's another thing, no tax on tips. And that sounds like, wow, if you're on Social Security, that sounds like a great deal. If you, work and part of your income or a lot of it is from tips, that sounds like a great deal. And it does sound like a great deal, except I think there's an asterisk, isn't there, sort of, with both of those
items? Yeah, well, one of the asterisks. one of the asterisks I just told you, which is that it's a 3-year life shelf, life on all of those. Those will go away. Right. By the way, something else brilliant about the timing, I'll tell you in a minute. But in addition, this isn't everybody who has Social Security all gets these deals. No, it has to do with your income. You have to be making less than $75,000, or maybe it's $75,000 and less, in order to get the benefit that comes with that. So it's kind of a tax benefit for the, if you will, the wealthier people on Social Security, if that makes sense. And with regard to tax on tips, yeah, that is capped. It's not unlimited. And it has to do with how much overall income you make. I think it's a $25,000 limit on that in terms of what you make. So you're right. The provisions sound good, but you have to dig beneath the surface because there's a whole heck of a lot of boilerplate that says, well, it's up to this limit. It's only this and it's only that. But you know what else is brilliant? And here, you know, I interviewed Tammy Duckworth today. She'll be on my show this Sunday. And Sean Casten, congressman, was also in our studios. And I talked to Congressman Casten afterwards. And I said, here's the thing. What's really interesting, the way this bill has been written, and this is the tricky part for Democrats, is that all of the bad stuff that's in there, the Medicaid cuts and all these kind of stuff. And there are Medicaid cuts. I mean, they can talk about the people on the couch, but there's cuts. But you know what they did? They drafted it so that those things don't kick in. You want to play trivia? Can I ask you? When do you think they don't kick in immediately? When do you think they kick in? Think in terms of politics. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but when do you think they kick in?
2028, I'm guessing.
Well, you're going to be right on a different point. It's not until 2026.
Okay.
It's after the 2026 elections that the bad stuff, we're pulling you off of Medicaid. But you are right that the good stuff, that here's your no tax on tips, that goes away after the 2028 presidential election.
Got it. The
burden for Democrats, they got to figure out a way to go, look, I know you haven't been hit with this yet, but you're going to get hit with it right after this election. One of the things Congressman Casten said to me offset today, he said, here's the thing. Republicans are banking on the fact that hospitals and clinics and stuff, that nothing's going to happen prior to the 2026 election. He goes, they're already preparing for it. They're already ready for the cuts and the finance. There's already a couple of hospitals in the country that have announced they're closing. So Casten's comment to me, again, off the set, but not private, was to say this is going to be felt sooner than Republicans expect it to be felt, even though it's not in the bill until a certain point in time.
Yeah. Speaking to that, there was I saw a report in the news concerning this bill and its effect on rural health care. Hospitals that are not in major metropolitan cities, hospitals that are like out in the country, and they are the closest access for healthcare for the individuals who live out there. And are those hospitals in trouble?
Yes. And not just because they're the closest. See, here's the thing. Look, when we live in an urban city like Chicago, we're blessed, right? If we're not feeling well, we'll run over to Northwestern Hospital. Oh, is Northwestern, they're too busy, or we can't get over there because there's too much traffic. We'll just go down over to Rush. In other words, we have such a plethora of hospitals around us that we have a big, but when you're in a small town, a rural area, sometimes there's only one hospital that serves a huge area of town. So one of the things that you're hearing about this is these Medicaid cuts, because that Medicaid, it's not just about, again, they don't go to individuals, they pay the bills, but it is also what funds a lot of clinics and hospitals.
Right. Yeah.
So with that getting cut, already two hospitals in the country, one is Nebraska, have already announced they're closing because they cannot survive without that Medicaid funding.
Well,
and then those people are in trouble because they've got nowhere else to go.
So you don't happen to know how far that new hospital is that they have to get to, do you? In place of the one that's going to close?
Although I lecture sometimes in Nebraska, but what I can tell you is if it's in a rural area of Nebraska, sometimes, and this is what I've heard people say on television, they might be an hour, 2 hours away from the next nearest healthcare facility.
Yeah,
that's the concern. Well, you know, that might be fine if you say, you know, I've got this. I don't know what this is on my finger. Let me go check that out. You go drive 2 hours and get it checked out. But when you have an emergency, and a heart attack, something is going on, you may not have 2 hours to make your way over to a facility that's quite a distance from you.
So, Paul, let me ask you about this deficit thing. Now, as I understand it, all right, the deficit, correct me if I'm wrong, the deficit is the amount of money that the United States is allowed to borrow. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
But I think one thing you want your listeners to know is, because I think it's relevant, whenever Congress, and they do this all the time, right? Whenever mm-hmm. they raise the debt ceiling,
yes.
So it depends who's president, right? Because the right. party out of power gripes about it. But the reality of it is, like the debt ceiling had to be raised under Biden. The problem is, and the answer from Democrats at that time was, look, you're paying for things that have already been expensed. In other words, you're not affecting a future budget. We're paying for these. We have to raise this deficit. And there's truth to that. That's how you keep the credit of the United States high, because we're covering our bills, essentially, that we've incurred. What you've been hearing about this bill that just got passed is how much it's going to increase the deficit, which is, and I've depending on who you talk to and what economic expert, here's the thing, the economic experts are all nonpartisan. So on this one, where they've said it's going to raise it anywhere from $3 to $5 trillion, the Republican response is nobody can trust the congressional budget. They're always not telling the truth. Until there's a Democratic president, then they believe in the Congressional Budget Office. And that's true on both sides. You always believe, yeah. you know, when you're yeah. out of power, then yeah. you believe the office. But the bottom right. line is the Congressional Budget Office is right more than it's not right. And so they're looking at an increase in the deficit of $3 to $5 trillion. And yet they have raised the budget deficit by, I think it's $3 or $4 trillion, not enough to cover all of what's going to happen. So down the line, in a period of years, they're going to have to raise the deficit ceiling again. And at that time, they'll just make the same arguments as, well, we've incurred the spending, we have to do it.
So is this something along the lines of, I have a credit card, and all of a sudden the credit card company tells me, you know what, you've been approved to have an additional $15,000 worth of credit. I mean, is that comparable to this? Just by raising the deficit?
It's comparable to what Republicans were just asked to do and what they passed. Give me more credit. In other words, you get your credit card in the mail.
Yeah.
And the credit card says, we're going to give you a $5,000 limit, John.
Right.
And
right.
you say, I'd like an $8,000
yeah,
limit, please.
Yeah. Right.
Well, if you're promising, if you told the credit card when you applied for the card, hey, by the way, you can trust me, I'm always going to pay my bills, and I'll never spend more than $5,000. And they're going to go, why are you asking us for $8,000? Good question.
Yeah.
And that's what you have here. If the Republicans are saying, oh, no, we're going to lower the deficit, it's all coming down, we're going to whatever, why are you asking for more money to raise the ceiling? You shouldn't need to then if you're going to lower the deficit. Obviously, you don't think you're going to be lowering the deficit.
And this is debt, and it is owned by somebody, isn't it? I mean, like China,
yeah,
for instance?
It's owned by the United States.
Doesn't China own part of this debt?
It's the United States debt.
Yeah, but doesn't China own part of that debt?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, right. Well, yes, I see what you mean. Yes, the debt itself is it's our debt. Yes, it is owned by China and Japan, many countries. And the truth is, things go on because, you know, China's pretty convinced we'll pay our bills, right? So even though we got, over this last 6 months or so, a national credit reduction, right? One of the agencies mm-hmm. lowered the U.S. credit. That sure doesn't happen very often. Might happen in the city of Chicago. Certainly doesn't happen for the United States. But it was lowered. So that makes borrowing more expensive for us. It makes borrowing tougher for us. But on the other hand, this is the United States of America. So, you know, we're probably always going to get the loans. We're always going to get what we want, but we may have to pay more for it, because now you have countries going, you know, you kind of didn't come to me with the credit you had last year.
Can
right.
I throw in
yes.
a question?
Yes, oh, of course you can.
Paul, David Jennings, quick question for you.
Dave.
What happens if China calls us on the note?
Well, first of all, the note itself will have terms to it, right? So if the note is going to expire in 5 years from now, China's not, unless there's some magical provision in it, China's not going to call you next week and say, hey, we're calling in the note. Now, there may be provisions in some of these things that if something happens, if your credit is downgraded, right, there may be, I haven't seen those agreements, none of us have, so I don't know what they say, but something like that could be in it. It's sort of like if you have a mortgage, you make your payments, but if you miss one, all of a sudden they can call in the whole mortgage, right? There may be provisions like that, but at the level that you're dealing with, Dave, of you know, at international borrowing and international,
and we're talking,
level,
we're talking, and we're talking
to happen,
and we're talking trillions of dollars here.
Absolutely,
right. Yeah.
This is not the house mortgage. Sure.
What one other quick question, and that is, what do you expect to be the end result of the arguments over whether or not a sitting president has the authority to deny federal funding to a city or a state that has safe city or safe state provisions. Will the Supreme Court uphold it?
That is an amazing question, and one that I will give a different answer to now than I might have given you a year ago. A year ago, I would have looked and said the Supreme Court will respect the sovereignty of sanctuary cities. The Supreme Court did things very differently than they've done since the Trump administration has taken place. Look, I've been a lawyer for 40 years. I'm a member of the Supreme Court bar. Like many lawyers, I revere the Supreme Court. But I've said this, I do our news every Friday night at 9:10 p.m. I don't do our news. I do my Politics Week in Review. And one of the things that I have said on the air is I have lost a lot of faith in the Supreme Court because they have, in the recent months, shown themselves not to be tied to the Constitution and the law, but truly to be tied up in the politics of it all. I actually thought you were going to ask me about what they did today, which was to step in and say, the president's been firing thousands and thousands of people. He shouldn't be able to do that. And the Supreme Court said, yeah, go ahead. And by the way, we're not ruling about the validity of the firings themselves, not of the firings, but we're not ruling on the validity of the law he's using. We'll get to that down the line. But for now, let's not stand in his way of firing thousands of people. The problem is, if, a year from now or 2 years from now, whenever that question gets to the court and the court says, now we're going to rule on the law, we find the law is valid. Congress had to be involved. They weren't. All these firings are null and void. Well, as look at the USAID experience, right? It doesn't matter that the court steps in and says, no, you can't get rid of USAID. When you fired everybody and everybody's gone and the food's not getting delivered and things are sitting on pallets, it really doesn't matter that the organization was brought back into existence. There's nobody to do it. So,
I think the answer
to your question, Dave, is that the Supreme Court, I believe, will empower this president. They've shown themselves taking the step to empower this president and the presidency. It's not just about Trump, because it's not just him. They are empowering the presidency to near monarch levels, and
the whole giving.
Not happy to say that, but it's what we're saying.
The whole giving of a sitting president immunity for actions that they may have taken during their term in office. It's like, hold it a second. We got through over two centuries and no American president ever made a sound or noise about, I need immunity. And then the court came along and just gave it to the current president. And
well,
it was
now,
just
gentlemen,
kind of weird.
I'm sorry, but I have to pound my gavel. We have reached the end of the allotted time here. But I thank you.
I had a really good point for you, John.
Quickly, give it to me in 15, 20 seconds.
Very quickly, what the court did this year was to say when a judge makes a decision around anywhere in the country that says you can't do this, the Supreme Court also stepped in and said, nah, they can't do that. Only we can do that. So from now on, when a judge steps in and says, Trump, you can't do it, that will only affect the plaintiffs in front of you. No longer will it affect the country or even necessarily the district you live in. More empowerment for the presidency. That was how I wanted to respond to Dave.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for being with us.